This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Lisa Mullins. In September of 1918, the flu epidemic hit Boston hard. Hospitals were overflowing and doctors were in demand. That same month, Rose Kennedy went into labor at her home in Brookline and the doctor was delayed. The nurse did as she'd been trained and held the baby in the birth canal for 2 hours until the doctor got there. The baby was Rosemary Kennedy. She was Rose Fitzgerald Kennedy and Joseph Kennedy Sr.'s first daughter. She was beautiful and brain damaged from birth. As she grew, her younger siblings, including sisters Kathleen and Eunice, thrived. But Rosemary was emotionally and physically slow. Her story is told in the new book by historian Kate Clifford Larson called Rosemary, the Hidden Kennedy Daughter.
She had difficulty walking and talking. She had difficulty managing a spoon with a bowl. She had difficulty dancing or any sports activities. And, of course, learning to read and write was a very difficult and long, prolonged process for Rosemary.
And she was also having what appeared to be seizures.
Exactly. Eunice described periodic seizures that Rosemary would have, and doctors would rush to the house and give Rosemary medication, and she would quiet down, and the kids were told never to ask, only to be quiet or to leave the house and wait until everything had quieted down.
You say there is one particular teacher and one school where she really thrived to the extent that with her limitations she could thrive. What was that?
This was a remarkable time in Rosemary's life. Her family had moved to England because Joe, her father, had been appointed the ambassador to England. And she was enrolled in a Catholic boarding school run by the Assumption Sisters. And one of the nuns there, Mother Isabel, had been trained under Maria Montessori, who had established the Montessori education method. So Mother Isabel used that method on Rosemary as a 20-year-old woman who had basically a fourth-grade education or level of intellectual ability. And Mother Isabel had great success with Rosemary, gave her a lot more confidence, and enabled her to read and write at a more comfortable level than she had been before.
You know, one of the interesting things you write about is how Rosemary, as a debutante, along with her sister, made a formal presentation of herself before the King and Queen of England at the time. It's almost like a Pygmalion story in a way, because the sisters and Rose, her mother, you know, really try to teach her the proper ways of doing things when you have to, for instance, curtsy in front of the king and queen. She looks gorgeous from the pictures, I'll tell you that.
Rosemary was a stunning, stunning young woman.
And very charismatic in her own way.
Yes, she just, the pictures from that day where she's being presented at court, she's got this broad, beautiful smile and this twinkle in her eye. But for 2 weeks, they drilled her on the proper curtsy, which was difficult for a young woman like Rosemary, who had difficulty telling the difference between left and right, and the proper etiquette, the phrases to use, the conversation that you're supposed to have at these sort of court presentations to the king and queen. But she did it successfully, and I'm sure it was the highlight of her life at the time.
There was one small stumble.
A small stumble, but she recovered.
And while she was making her curtsy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's tempting to say that she had a lot of potential and was making strides, as you say, under the Montessori system. But she started to get worse as she got older. And I guess this brings us to what is the most distressing part of her life and the book, and that is that her father, Joe, decided that she would undergo a lobotomy. What drove him to that decision, and why was she considered at the time a good candidate?
Joe sent his family back to the United States as war was heating up in Europe. Rosemary was the last to leave, which is a great tragedy because it was a great place for her. She comes back to the United States, and her family, her parents are struggling to find a similar environment for her, but there was nothing here for her. So they pushed her from one school, one convent to another, and it traumatized her a lot. And she was acting out, having very strong mental health breakdown issues. Rosemary was at a convent school in Washington, D.C., and she was escaping at night. Then the nuns would find her, and she'd be all messy with leaves in her hair and things like that. So they were very worried about who was she meeting, was it young men, and what was happening. So Joe was at his wit's end, and he investigated a brand new operation that was being experimented here in the United States called the prefrontal lobotomy. And doctors Walter Freeman and James Watts were in Washington performing this surgery. They had only done maybe 80, 90 patients at the time that Joe discussed the procedure with them.
The procedure itself, as you describe it, is brutal, and she was awake during the time she was speaking so they could determine what her capabilities were. And eventually, with the fourth, I think you said the fourth and final snip, she stopped talking.
She stopped talking, and she became physically disabled as well as intellectually disabled, far worse.
On the table.
On the table, they knew right then and there. The American Medical Association, at the time that Rosemary had her lobotomy, was recommending against it. They thought that it was too experimental. But Joe ignored that caution and had Rosemary subjected to it.
Why would he take that chance?
I find this incredibly confusing. Joe was a very smart man. He must have known the risks. I think he was desperate to silence Rosemary. I think he did not want to have to deal with her anymore as he watched his sons, and he was hoping for more political career for himself and for his sons, and she was a liability. And so this was a way to silence her.
And you come to that conclusion, but you're also writing about how much really a part of the family she was.
The family is remarkable. It's a tragedy and it's inspiring because they tried so hard to be inclusive and keep her with the family and have her be part of everything that they did. Her siblings were part of it. They included her in everything and they accommodated her disabilities, which is part of why Eunice Kennedy Shriver went on to establish the Special Olympics.
So what happened to Rosemary for the rest of her life?
She ended up at St. Coletta's in Jefferson, Wisconsin. It's an institution run by the Catholic Church, and she spent 60 years there. And they took very good care of her. She learned to walk, and she had a basically happy life. But her family didn't see her for, some of them, for 20 years or more. Jack saw her in 1958 when he was on the campaign trail, and he took a secret trip to see her. Her father did not see her for almost two decades, her mother for at least two decades or more. But eventually in the 1970s, she was reintegrated into the family, so she got to know her nieces and nephews who loved her deeply, and she became a part of their lives.
You quote Tim Shriver, who is the son of Eunice Shriver and Sergeant Shriver, and I think he sheds light on really what Rosemary became for the family itself. This woman who was intellectually disabled, physically disabled, but became almost a kind of muse.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Yes, absolutely. She became a muse for them, for Eunice, certainly, for Teddy, who helped pass a lot of legislation to accommodate people with disabilities here in this country.
Senator Edward Kennedy.
Yeah.
Who was the youngest in the family. He was nine when she disappeared.
Absolutely. And he had never been told what happened to her. She just disappeared, and it scared him a lot. He was afraid.
Afraid in part that if he did something wrong, he was going to be put away, too.
Absolutely.
Kate Clifford Larson, the author of the book Rosemary, The Hidden Kennedy Daughter. Kate is going to be speaking tomorrow afternoon at the JFK Library. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.